Hello and welcome to I Am The Eggpod with me, Chris Shaw. The Eggpods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this episode, I'm joined by data journalist and data editor at Google, Simon Rogers. Hello.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. We're doing on the hottest day of the year. So
I know. I left California and come to... I'm in Bedford right now, and it's, yeah, incredibly hot. Amazing.
Yeah. Before we start, I've got to ask, when did you discover the Beatles?
So it's hard to remember a time when the Beatles weren't a part of my life. Though my earliest kind of conscious memory, I guess, is my parents had a lot of the albums when I was growing up. And I can remember the White Album going on. And the reason I know it was a White Album is because the Apple. And it must have been side one, so therefore it must have been back in the USSR and the Jet Sound. And I can remember dancing around as I must have been like 3 or 4. So literally it's my first memory is of the Beatles. And yeah, my parents had like, I'm sorry, Dad, I have now some of his original albums. So, you know, like got the first edition of Revolver and so on sitting in the house. And so, yeah, so they've always been there. And I guess I kind of, they were just like, I suppose they were more background to me until when John was murdered. That was like a moment in our house, like my mum was in tears. It was a huge thing. And it kind of made me, I guess like a lot of people, it kind of, I was at the time as well. I was like, you know, I was 13. It was the time when you start really getting into music. And it prompted me to kind of go on a rediscovery, I suppose, the albums we didn't have in the house.
So, tell me what being a data journalist and data editor at Google involves and how it resolves around the Beatles.
I've managed to kind of to add the Beatles into most of my career moves, but I used to work at The Guardian and I was a news editor, and basically I worked on around lots of things, but I really somehow I got lumped in as the person who kind of understood data a bit, which is weird because I was terrible at maths as a kid, but I did want to understand how things worked, and data gives you a way to understand how things work. So we set up this thing called the Data Blog at The Guardian, which was basically a blog of data where we would publish data sets, make them accessible for people. And I would always try and kind of add in Beatles data sets into that, because when you've got this incredible body of work, you can do that. You can do it legitimately, and possibly I was pushing things a little bit. And but at Google now, what I do is I work with Google Trends data, which is basically search data, so it's how we search. And we use that to tell stories. So we work with a lot of newsrooms and journalists around helping them use that trends data to understand what the world cares about and what we're thinking about, which obviously at the moment where we're all like going through all of these things from a pandemic through to even things like heat wave or political turmoil, it helps us understand a little bit more about how we care about those things.
Hence why there's so much about the Beatles.
Yeah, sorry.
Good. Because that thing you were talking about, The Guardian,
yeah,
where you basically went through every word ever sung by the Beatles.
Yeah.
And you have a list.
So I got this poor kid who was on an internship. I'd wanted to do this, and I'd not got around to it. And we got every single lyric, and I can't remember what we got it on the end. And we put them all to a giant file, and then we just counted the number of times each word appeared in Beatles songs. And my assumption had been that it would be love, would be number one. But it's not love, and it's you is the top word. And that really made me think that actually, part of the appeal of the Beatles is the way that they would always speak to you personally. You feel it a personal thing. And at one level, that's kind of extreme, like the guy who turned up John Lennon's house saying all the songs were about him. But we do feel that, you know, this is a personal thing, right? That they're speaking to us. And I think that's part of that appeal. And just seeing that kind of come out in the data, I thought was really interesting.
And it completely sums up their inclusivity.
Yeah, exactly. And even the other things in there, like your and I in a way that is speaking to you. It's like, I feel like this. And I think just seeing that kind of come out in the numbers is always fascinating to me.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to do a quick top 10. So number 10 is In, 9 is My, 8 is Love. So 8 is, love is quite high. Ooh. 7A, 6 and, 5 me, 4 2, I'm getting confused now, 3 the, 2 I, and as you say, 1 is you, which is pretty well double, almost double all the others.
Yeah, and even that's even including that basic things like and the. Normally we take those out of those kind of things, yeah, because they're so, but actually, the kind of fact that you is so much higher, even the words like that, I thought was really interesting at the time and maybe we'll do it. Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody.
Help, you know I need someone. So you sent me over some amazing data. So we've got all sorts of things here. I think one of the most interesting for me is the top countries searching for the Beatles in 2022.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? So I had assumed it would be the UK or maybe the States, you know, but number one country. And the thing about search data, I should say first, is that it's proportional. So it's how you can compare small places with big places. It's kind of normalised automatically. Right. So it's about the percentage of searches. So the fact that number one country is Iceland, I thought was really interesting. Well, and then the hidden tour of Iceland that we didn't know about, maybe. I don't know. So it's just peculiar. And then followed by the UK, the US, Canada, Ireland, but then Mexico, Cuba, Chile. And yeah, so it's not all just English speaking countries at all that are in the top. Yeah, it's that global appeal. It's kind of astonishing.
It's a lot of South American countries in the top 20.
Yeah. And the way that search data works is it's all language agnostic. Like, we can look at a topic, so the topic of the Beatles, and it includes search in different languages. So the fact they're still proportionally higher in those countries. I mean, you expect to see Australia in there, but Norway and Argentina and Uruguay and so on was really interesting to me.
And Italy is quite low down, which surprised me.
Right.
I don't know why. I thought European countries would be slightly higher.
I mean, this is 2022, and who knows if we tried a few years ago, and maybe it might reflect other things like where Get Back's being shown and so on. But even so, I think it was really interesting. I don't know what's going on in Iceland to make it the number one country, but it was just a fascinating insight to me.
I wonder if it's because Yoko built the Imagine Peace Tower in Iceland.
Right.
And I wonder if that's had an impact on... I guess if someone builds this huge ice tower with laser beams,
you want to know
who is this
and why Iceland? I didn't know about that at all. So there you are. I've learned something new in the conversation already, which is great.
Have a look on Google. That's what
I want to know. So Iceland Peace Tower. That's amazing.
Yeah, have a look.
Oh my god! Yeah, it's huge.
But yeah, that could be the reason. I don't know. Another thing that interesting is where you've listed the top questions searched about the Beatles in the US this year.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because when we look at questions, especially look at the top ones, they're always, a lot of them are kind of basic things. Because the great thing about when you're searching for something, right, is that, you know, we're all honest with search in the way that we do stuff, but we're all kind of, you know, we use it to find out stuff we don't know. And so a lot of them are things that, you know, that people out there in the world may be still curious about, like why they broke up and when they broke up and so on. And I think Get Back would have spurred some of those questions too. But also a lot of them are things that I think actually might have come out of Got Back, like things like who owns the Beatles catalogue. I mean, to me, that is an incredibly simple question about an incredibly complicated issue.
Yeah.
Right? There's still, would take you a whole show to explain. And the fact that people are really interested, I think, is interesting. And then people are obviously asking how George and John died as well. But other things too, like when were the Beatles popular? And when did they come to America?
Yeah.
And that's that sort of thing. And how old were they when they broke up? Because one of the things that occurs to me is when you watch Get Back, I'm sorry, there's a lot of focus around that because I've just rewatched it again, but... You know, it really, when you think about how young they were, when they'd already done so much, it's incredible. Mm. So the fact that people want to know that, I think, is really interesting, having seen that and seen that kind of incredible creativity in action.
Yeah. A lot of them seem to be questions by, you know, a younger generation, I'm guessing. Mm. They're asking very basic questions. When were they popular? And then who killed John Lennon?
Yeah.
And it's like they're discovering this story for the first time.
Yeah.
Which
and
is
it is a story, isn't it? I mean, that's the thing about it. It's not. It's like a legend in a way, and has all the same reason that kids love fantasy things or Dungeons and Dragons, all these things. In a way, because like people love the Beatles legend and who these characters were, and villains and heroes and heroines and stuff that came in at different moments. Yeah. But I see it with my kids, you know, they've grown up in a house where they've had the Beatles on constantly, and now they're, but now they're at an age, you know, they're teens and they're kind of discovering them for themselves and having their own favourite songs. And like, so my daughter's favourite song is And I Love Her. And we have, obviously now we live in the States, so we had the British albums, but now we're kind of discovering the American albums. So for instance, her favourite Beatles album is at the moment is Something Else by the Beatles. You know, there's a nice
really
four or five US album, and it's, you know, by Capitol. Wow. I think it's on Capitol. It's that those weird yeah. American remixes where the reverb's really heavy and, you know, they're in stereo early and stuff.
Mm.
But I've had a copy. I guess gave it to her because, you know, she loves that song so much. And now she listens to that album all the time. Whereas for me, it was rather sold. Right? And it'll change over time, but it's really interesting to me how you kind of, they're discovering the stuff themselves and they're owning it. It'll be theirs now. It won't just be ours anymore.
Superb. The top two questions, both in the UK and the US, were why did the Beatles break up and when did the Beatles break up? I wonder if that was because Paul McCartney did an interview, I can't remember what it was, this year or end of last year, where he said, which basically everybody knows, that John quit the Beatles.
Yeah.
And that it was all over the press because the press all assumed that Paul had just, because he made the big announcement that he was the one that broke the Beatles up. And he said, no, it's actually John, which has been written about from day one.
Yeah.
And it went viral. It was insane. It was just this blatantly obvious bit. So I'm guessing that might have had an impact on what people were looking for.
When he says stuff like that, it does go kind of all over the place because we've seen so many interviews where it's the same stories again. Because, and then you totally understand why. If you were Paul McCartney and you had to give a million interviews, you would have your set of stories for totally, you know, reasonable reasons. I mean, it's impossible to imagine being at that level of a person, isn't it? When we went to see the Got Back gig in Oakland.
Did you? Oh,
yeah, and we took my daughter and her, so her and another 18-year-old. My son was so gutted because he had COVID. He was destroyed. He really wants to go. And just seeing him there, and he was telling the stories, you know, saying about Blackbird and about, you know, John and Hey Jude and stuff. But for them, it's the first time they're seeing this stuff live, seeing this then 79-year-old doing an incredible 2.5 hours with no break and hearing these stories for the first time, being moved and dancing. It's kind of amazing to see that.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
One of my favourite things you've done, where you've listed the Beatles songs ranked in search, so you can compare them from 2004, year by year, up to 2022, and there's been quite a change.
Yeah. I mean, some ways, and some ways, some things have stayed the same, haven't they? It was interesting, but... So 2004 is as far back as Google Trends data goes, which is still interesting, right, for now, because it's a few years on. So in 2004, the top five songs were Yesterday, Let It Be, Help, In My Life, and Hey Jude, right? But in 2022, this is up to the point when I did the data, the top five songs were Get Back, Let It Be, Yesterday, Help, and Something. And it's interesting how much Something, I mean, having grown up with Something, I just think Something is in the air, as it were, at the moment. And you can see it actually shows up later down the list when we talk about the chords that people learn. People search for song chords. And the top song that people search for chords for in the UK was Something. There is a thing about that song that's of now that still feels really current.
Yeah.
I mentioned the Get Back gig, and actually on the way back from that, and I found these because of you, is the isolated Something vocals. And we listened to that in the car on the way out of that gig, but is the perfect palate cleanser, by the way. And just like sat in silence with these two teenagers just like marvelling at these incredible harmonies. There is something about Something.
Something in the way she knows, and all I have to do is think of her. Something in the things she shows me.
You do it year by year as well.
Mm.
So it sort of starts off, and you can see as the years go by, the impact of Love was released in 2006.
Yeah.
So things start moving around there.
But Revolution really pops up with Love. I mean, it's a big part of that, isn't it? You see it kind of go up in 2006 and then kind of nip down again afterwards. We should. Yeah. I'll, there's a link to this visual. I don't know if you can add it in the podcast, but it's. Yeah, oh, great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you can see it so people can see it. And
I'll
see
put it on the website, yeah.
I've tried to add in dates as well, sort of events in kind of Beatle, in the Beatle world. So when the, you know, like when the game came out, so you can really see the effect things like and how big Help was. Help was number one for ages.
I know, and that's above things like Yesterday, Let It Be, and something. And I think it's 2012, isn't it? Suddenly Yesterday pops to the top,
yeah,
and Help moves down. But I'm trying to work out why Help would have been so popular.
I was wondering that, and I wondered if it was because of the game. Because it's a big song to play in the Rock Band game. Sorry, the Rock Band Beatles edition, which was a huge thing when that was launched. You kind of forget now because there have been so many huge Beatles moments since. But that was like, you know, the ability to play it, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, somehow, and I know there was like, there were cover versions of the charts and stuff a little bit, weren't there, in the early 2000s. But, and that appreciation, I guess with Britpop came that reappreciation of the Beatles as well, because amount of the time they're referenced by everybody. But
I think 2010, obviously, the Beatles started selling on iTunes.
Yeah.
And the figures go all over the place from there on.
Yeah, it's kind of that ability to hear songs on their own without the surrounding albums, which I both think is a great thing and a terrible thing.
Well, yeah.
You know, how would you find Tomorrow Never Knows if it wasn't an album that you had to listen to?
Yeah.
And also the way that Across the Universe goes up and down as well, like just goes up into the top four and then disappears off.
What you're saying about iTunes, I think from 2010 on, Birthday, the song, is always in there as one of the most searchable songs.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that's just he's a Beatles fan. Did they do a song about Birthday?
Who knows how the algorithm finds that for you? Yeah, exactly. And then so it becomes a self-perpetuating thing then, doesn't it, after that?
Yeah.
And even like a song like Girl, like 2012, like Girl goes up and it's like number four or five and goes back down.
Yeah, so 2020 onwards is amusing because Get Back is nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
And then 2021, it's number one.
It's so interesting, isn't it? And it definitely changed. I mean, the documentary definitely changed how I perceived that song. I'd always seen it as a kind of, almost like a throwaway thing. I don't know why. I mean, it's obviously not. And you can see how it's not in the documentary. But then seeing it being created, it's totally changed how I perceive that. And then I was always worried about the Commonwealth version that it would not stand the test of time, but it's really funny.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, he can say at the end of that, you know, fucking up out, which is... So, you know, just seeing that in reality and what it was actually like, I think it's incredibly powerful. It does change the way you perceive it.
I've just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just the girl for me and I want all the world to see we've met.
Tell me about the top searched LPs this year in the UK.
Yeah, so obviously the one thing I don't think I appreciate until I moved to the States how big the difference is between people's American LP experience and the British one. For instance, I've Just Seen a Face is on the radio all the time there. And it's never, I've never heard it growing up. Not, you know, apart from the fact it was on the album, but you know, it's an album I didn't really listen to that much. And you know, so it's the first song on Rubber Soul, isn't it, in the States? So it's,
in the
so
States,
it's yeah, it's popular, so people know. So we just decided to look at the UK albums. And, you know, this is in 2022, and the number one is Abbey Road, followed by Pepper, followed by number three, Let It Be. Number four is the White Album. Five is Rubber Soul, six is Revolver, seven, Please Please Me, eight, Help. And then number nine is the Blue Album, 6, 7, 70. And then followed by Hard Day's Night, number 10. 11, Beatles for Sale. Number 12 is Red Album. 13, With the Beatles. 14, Yellow Submarine. Followed by, coming in, I'm probably a distant 15, is Magical Mystery Tour. And it's interesting to me, because when you look at, you mentioned earlier this piece we did about the number of weeks that things stayed on the charts, like singles and albums. The Red and Blue Album were on the charts forever. And then when they came out in 1973, they were massive. And I didn't actually have them growing up. Obviously, one of the only people that didn't. actually, you know, get introduced to the Beatles through the Red and Blue album, because we had the other albums, so we just didn't have them. But they're huge, and they're still huge. I mean, the fact that more people search more for the Blue album than for A Hard Day's Night, or Beatles for Sale, or for the Red album more than with the Beatles, that's astonishing. And it's obviously not a ranking of quality, plainly, but it's interesting to me. That's what Alan Klein's one good thing he did for the Beatles, right? It's the red and blue albums. But you know, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I think the thing for me is Let It Be, which is traditionally, you know, not in the top. But again, the impact of Get Back, it's now the third most searched LP.
Ahead of the White Album or Revolver. I mean, Revolver, I think, would be, if you'd done this in like the late 90s, early 2000s, Revolver, I'm sure it'd be top. The number of times that I've name checked, it was on Enemy's, like, you know, number one album of all time, this, wasn't it? And I just remember it. Seeing it so much, you know. And the fact that Rubber Soul's ahead of it is fascinating to me. I mean, I love Rubber Soul. It's still probably my favourite album just because of, you know, where I grew up. But the fact that it's ahead of Revolver is surprising to me. Or Please Please Me. Think how long Please Please Me stayed in the charts. You know, the fact is it's only number 7.
29 weeks at number 1 and, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some little notes you put on here that I quite enjoy. You were saying the Beatles are searched for more than twice as much as the Rolling Stones since 2004. Just to annoy any Stones fans.
I'm sorry. Blues Covers band, of course. No, it's fascinating, that, isn't it? But even, so right now, the world's biggest search band is BTS. And during December, the Beatles nearly overtook BTS in search. Wow. Now, some people listening to that might think, who cares who are BTS? They are, I can't tell you how enormous BTS are. They are like 1963 levels, Beatles levels of popularity amongst a certain generation. Worldwide, globally. So the fact that Beatles could approach that several decades after Spell is incredible to me. And to see it happening. So yeah, they are. They're consistently more searched than Stones. Which is fascinating to see that style, even though, you know, people are Stones, people are both. But I think, although my daughter got into an argument with a friend at school about Stone, which was better. So people are still having those arguments. Even now,
no kids, way.
18-year-olds having an argument about which Beatles or Stones are better.
Wow, that is superb. Long may it continue.
18-year-olds in San Francisco, which is, I imagine, if you're a kid in Liverpool in 1962, you would imagine that some 18-year-olds in San Francisco would be arguing about which, you know, whether you're better than the other massive band of the 20th century.
Brilliant. Top two cities searching for the Beatles in the past year were Liverpool and Birkenhead, which is wonderful.
Wonderful and gladly not surprising. But I also love, if you look at some of the other lists as well, like Reykjavik, okay, Iceland, we know Iceland, big country, but Ventura in California, I love that. That's not far from where I live. And Kansas City, in fact, Kansas City is searching, and maybe they're searching for that song as well. And Dunedin in New Zealand. So, yeah, that global, this is the power of the internet, it's like the global way that people are searching. That this band is incredible.
So what can we learn from all this data? Does it teach you demographics, I'm guessing?
Yeah, we don't actually know demographics with Google Trends data, which is, you know, it's a public tool, anybody can go on. You can search this stuff yourself as well if you want to, listeners out there. But my feeling is that I was a bit anxious doing this. I thought, will I find that actually they haven't persisted in the way that I and other Beatles assessors think they have, and that really they're sort of set an aspect. And what it shows me is they're still a living thing. Beatles, as a group, it's almost beyond the members now. It's become this kind of living, breathing, growing and changing topic for people. But every time somebody goes on and searches who owns the Beatles catalogue, they learn something as it builds that legend, but also they develop this other appreciation around the songs. The fact that the songs are still resonate so much is really important. You know, I thought a lot about this because we rewatched yesterday, you know, the Richard Curtis movies, which is a great film, it's fab, but, you know, that focus on it is just the songs that songs made. The songs are amazing, they do resonate, but part of the resonate is because of them, you know, because of who they were and the way that they, like, one of the things recently, you know, I guess our appreciation for it has changed all the time, but one of the things I was looking for was search for harmonies and harmonising. Just because I've really grown to appreciate that in a way I hadn't before, how much they were a close harmony group, You know, yes. Now, right, it's possible to do close harmonies and not be the Everly Brothers or you know, a barbershop quartet, but those the fact they could closely harmonize so easily, so simply, you see it and Get Back. So that when you hear a Beatles song, even if it is a Paul McCartney song or a John song or a George song, it's them because they're all on it somewhere and you can hear a harmony pops in, even if it's only for a second, it's there and it's them together. And so that fact that it really is. It was searching for those songs, but it was searching for them and who they were. They've almost become beyond people, haven't they? Beyond individuals. Which is not fair to put on anybody, is it? But somehow they've done it.
Simon, you interviewed Ringo once, is that right? Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I used to work for a magazine called The Big Issue, which you may know if you live in London. And at that time, they did a lot of celebrity interviews. And the poor music correspondent, poor guy, I would sometimes swoop in and I was featured there, so I'd nab an interview once. And he got an interview with Ringo. And I don't know if he voluntarily gave it to me, but he was a lovely guy. But anyway, so I got to chat to Ringo. And it was on the phone, so unfortunately it wasn't in person. But yeah, he's the only Beatle I've ever got to talk to, but I will always have that memory. And I was trying to find a bit. Unfortunately, there's only a paper copy. And I need to dig it out. Well, one of the things he said which did stick with me is he said, and maybe he said this a lot of times, but he said that every time he goes somewhere new to the concert, he finds a church or finds somewhere religious to pray. And he said anywhere you're on your knees is home. So the fact that, you know, he was just chatting to this random guy and he just said this really incredible thing. I mean, I'm sure maybe he said it lots of times, but just a sweet, lovely, lovely guy as you'd expect. And one of the things then about watching Get Back is you realise how he was the glue that kind of held everybody together. But it's kind of this incredible presence where he can, that bit, you know, where Paul's writing Get Back and you can see where Ringo knows it's a song and he starts just tapping away on his lineage. He realises then, and that knowledge. And I don't know, maybe I heard on your show that he normally drummers look into the bass, and he looks into the vocals who he's playing with, and maybe that's what makes him so incredible.
Oh, it's everything, isn't it? We were talking about also Ringo. You know, he's basically the reason for Get Back. He was the reason for all the films, really, wasn't he? I'm guessing A Hard Day's Night, Ringo's the star.
Yeah,
Help. It's all about Ringo's ring.
Yeah.
And Yellow Submarine, he's the star in that. And
he's the protagonist, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Magical Mystery Tour. Get Back is just everything is happening around him. We've got to get it done because Ringo's not going abroad, so we're not going abroad. Ringo's got to do a film, so we've got to get it done.
Yeah.
I love that. And he's just his...
it's incredible, the power of Ringo, isn't it? We watched... I made the kids... So the kids grew up with Yellow Submarine and so on, and... Yeah, they do. They sometimes have cinema shows, which is kind of amazing to go see in the cinema. We did that a few years ago. But I made them watch Father's Day this year. I got to choose the movies. So I chose Hard Day's Night. They'd not seen it. And what was amazing to me was, A, obviously the obvious thing, but it still feels really powerful. Like when you get Beatlemania watching that. But also, it just feels like a great film. Even though it's in black and white, it feels less dated than Help. It feels a bit dated, obviously, as a movie now. But, Hard Day's Night. So, obviously, Ringo is just like a huge, like the soul of that film. But also, I was always watching John's so manic. He's always talking. Always, and you realise just what the charisma of, like, of John Lennon, which you see in Get Back, is why people were so, they want to be liked by him, to kind of be noticed by him, or just have, imagine having that giant charisma and what that would do to you as well. It's hard to imagine, really.
Oh, yeah. Which goes back to the questions searched about the Beatles. And it's, you know, you've got things, who left the Beatles first? What was the first Beatles album? For kind of basic stuff. But then you see Get Back and then you see these intricate personalities. And it's going to make people want to learn more, isn't it?
I think so. And people are probably watching it and searching simultaneously. That's the power of us having our phones with us constantly, I guess, is that, you know, we second screen it all the time. You know, we saw, certainly you'd see spikes in searches, you know, the day that came out. And there was a period where everybody I knew was watching it. Even people who weren't really Beatles fans were watching it. Most people, a lot of people, yeah. I said most people, a lot of people would just get through the first episode. Oh, it's a bit depressing. So no, you've got to watch the whole thing. And a friend of mine who's, you know, like a music fan, but, you know, probably more of a Grateful Dead living in California than a Beatles fan, but he said, you know, the whole point is it's the narrative arc. You've got to watch the whole thing because you get this incredible kind of narrative story arc out of it. And you could see kind of questions evolve even over the first couple of days. People, one day they'd watch the first episode and then the next day you'd see other questions kind of popping up, which are maybe a little bit more intricate detail.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arrive.
So you've also done a search on trends for Paul McCartney.
Well, 80th birthday, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And obviously it coincided obviously with the tour. A lot of them, I think, were spiked by the tour. So from Syracuse, New York was the top place searching in the past month ahead of his birthday, followed by Augusta, which I believe were both places he toured in. And people were searching for the set list and so on. Fenway Park, places like that, you know, this massive tour across the states. It even caused a spike in searches for the weather in Baltimore in the week that he was playing. And as I say, weather is a top search thing, so there you go. So yeah, McCartney is the most searched Beatle in the US in the last year, although Lennon is more searched worldwide. It is incredible to me that these singers are still being searched in the way that they are.
I think you said the Got Back set list spiked by 80% in a month.
Yeah. And I think it because of the places, and certainly the tour moved, didn't it, from the East Coast to the West Coast, where it started, which is where we lived, to the East Coast. And you can see the spikes in search as he went. Be interesting to follow those around the country. I should have mapped that, actually. I must do that now.
Yeah. You've also got the top songs searched with Paul McCartney 2022 in the US. Very surprising ones in there.
Surprising to me because your assumption would be they're all going to be Beatles. And I think, am I wrong to say the majority are not Beatles? It's about half, isn't it? They're on. So Blackbird is the top searched song, but it's followed by Band on the Run. You've got Hey Jude, but it's followed by Bluebird. And then Birthday, followed by Jet, or Let It Be, followed by Maybe I'm Amazed. And then 4 or 5 Seconds is still searchable. It's the one he did with Kanye and Rihanna. And then Silly Love Songs, which is, you know, and maybe that, and in the US, there is this thing, I think in the UK, there was a tendency to kind of, to treat Paul as something a little bit embarrassing. Certainly when I was a kid at school, I loved the song Tug of War, I love that whole album, but I wouldn't talk about it at school. You know, at the same time that the Pistols were around or whatever, you know. But, you know, in the States, he was loved and Wings are loved and celebrated. And being in a US audience and seeing people in tears and dancing and screaming at him and loving him, just loving him. And that's incredible to see that and still. So, you know, I'm not surprised. I mean, we looked at the collaborations that were searched by the Beatles, obviously Wings, but Kanye and Michael Jackson. Still being searched, yes. and then if you look at the chord searches, I thought were really interesting. So this is when people are searching for Paul McCartney's on chords, and my assumption would be Blackbird number one. It wasn't; it was called My Love, and followed by Another Day, which I know was written as with the Beatles, and then Live and Let Die, and then Bluebird, and then Blackbird.
Bluebird before Blackbird.
Yeah, fascinating, isn't it? And I wonder if that's because of the. You didn't play that, did you, on the tour? It's so interesting to hear. And then lyrics as well. So obviously Get Back was top, followed by Hey Jude, Let It Be, but then Jet, and then Penny Lane, but then Maybe I'm Amazed, and then Here Today, and partly he did play that on tour, which is, you know, the moment I broke down. And then Junk and My Love Yesterday. And we had Junk on in the car the other day, and the kids were just saying how much they loved it, and it's fascinating to me. I don't think they're just humouring me at this point. I think they do genuinely stuff themselves. So.
Yeah, Junk surprised me being that high up.
Yeah,
I guess it's we were speaking before about people discovering the Beatles. You know, you grow up from I guess our generation where you just buy the albums. You might buy a book, and then this. Oh right, Please Please Me. That's the first one.
Yeah.
So you might buy it in order, or you'll buy it in era. Now it's just a load of songs available to everybody.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, the album as a concept, I'm guessing, is not what it once was to a lot of younger people. So, the, you know, forgotten ones are going to suddenly...
So interesting, isn't it? There. And we had, my son and I had a long drive, a 4-hour each way drive recently. So we did a playlist of every album, every UK album in order, so we could listen to them all in order. And it was great. Although then I realised that I missed off Yellow Submarine. I had to kind of put that back in. But, well, I think, actually, we talk about songs. It'd be interesting to look at how Hey Bulldog kind of has risen in popularity. But listening to that, I made realise also, it was great to listen to them all that way, but we're missing the singles and the B-sides. And imagine doing something like Hey Jude and not putting on an album. Unimaginable. Now, the fact that, you know, Alan Klein's other thing I have to be thankful for is the Hey Jude album, which I do love. I think it's a great compilation. But even so, to have yeah, I know that's not a common thing. But even so, but yeah, like Turtles do, that's the next time I think we'll do the singles. But can you listen to them just in order? I don't know.
You did a list a while ago of the Beatles albums and the chart positions.
Ooh.
And it kind of reiterates what you were saying. So all the singles and the B-sides would have been on Past Masters Volume 1, Volume 2.
Yeah.
And chart-wise, back in 1988, they only got to number 46 and 49, respectively. And you think of the songs on those albums.
Yeah.
You've got all the number one singles and all the stuff that wasn't available. They're astonishing. But it was I'm guessing the format was a bit tired at the time. Now they're just songs people can click on.
Yeah.
And it's just opened this whole new world of the Beatles songs rather than the Beatles albums.
Isn't it interesting? It's so, like, I was looking at that list again, so I remember at the time we got the data from the Gallup, I guess, or the official chart company.
Mm.
And just like those gaps in times when there was nothing, and what else was going on at the time. So you've got 1977, you've got Hollywood Bowl and Love Songs, and then 79 Rarities. And then you've got like a couple of years where there's ballads, but that's, you know, kind of a hold on. You've got 2 years then to 1982. So it's really wild kind of punk and new wave and stuff. And arguably, you wouldn't really have new wave or punk without the Beatles, really. Like in some distant corner of people's memory, you know, they're so, you know, you can hear that when you're, you know, hear some of the songs now, or hear Rain and see how influential that was on Britpop and stuff.
Oh yeah.
But yes, you've got this whole period where there's nothing, and then when suddenly there's everything is just being reissued constantly. You know, around the late 80s, everything kind of, it's got every album's re-released.
Well, that was all the CDs, wasn't it, when they came out?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then and it's really not until the BBC album, I think it was in 94, we've actually got something that's genuinely, you know, adds to our knowledge and different and new. And yeah, I was re-listening to that again the other day. It's such a great album. And then all that energy, it's almost like you can hear that kind of punk energy come through some of those performances. You know, there's all R&B tracks that they're doing. It's kind of amazing.
But yeah, throughout the 80s, nothing really happened. It was just those compilation after compilation, just getting more and more desperate. I think the nadir of that was the...
the film one. I actually had that. Yeah, I actually had that single, the horrible medley. What was it
called? Oh, yes.
The movie track one.
That's movie medley.
Oh, God, that's bad. I still have that somewhere. I regret it, but I still have it. Yeah,
don't worry. I've got the Star Sound, Stars on 45 album, not just the single. So you're in safe hands. But then throughout the 90s, they're just astonishing. It's, you know, 93, Beatles 62, 66, Red and Blue albums are reissued.
Yeah.
So they both make 3 and 4. Then the BBC made number one. The anthologies 2, 1, and 4, respectively. Then the Yellow Submarine song track, which we forget, just missing out. Then the biggest selling album of the first 10 years of the 2000s was in, which was 1.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, like Anthology 2? Because I think of Anthology 2 as the best of the three. And just partly because of that Strawberry Fields sequence. And I can remember when that came out, hearing people playing that. Like, I'd hear it, and, you know, like our neighbours would play it, like, at 2 in the morning or something. Yeah. But, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? One of the other things about the song thing of being able to stream what you want at the moment is how you can do different things. So one of the things I did recently, it was just upon my poor children, I submitted them to this, is where, because I was came really apparent to me how, you know, the first couple of albums were so many girl group covers and how many of them were John on, you know, soul track covers, different to the rock and roll stuff, different to covering Chuck Berry, covering Arthur Alexander or something. And so I did this this playlist, which is the original of each of those songs and then their version. And we'd had these discussions in the car about which was better or which was different or which added something to it. And you can just hear some of them, they're not as good, they're a bit perfunctory. But some of them, you know, obviously Twist and Shout is, blows your head off. And each time hearing that now, like, and I was sitting in the car telling my son when he was little about a story about the deal late at night and, you know, strips of waste, you know, cough sweets and all that. And then hearing it again, and every time that still just blows your socks off. Incredible to hear that, but also to hear, well, how often it was John who was doing the girl group songs, the lead vocal on those. And you know, that came out, you know, to know her is to love her. Blimey. Just the harmonies on that, and that wasn't like a single. Incredible.
I'm guessing that pushed things like This Boy. That was kind of like the inspiration for that. So I'm guessing, actually, we'll get the money for this one.
And Please, Mr. Postman, which, you know, just, I don't know why I've listened to that a lot recently. It's just come on a lot on the radio. Just the harmonies on that and the constant driving, singing off each other that comes out of that. Incredible.
Best hand claps in the world.
Yeah. And just the first, but also just like re-listening to the first album. It's like the first album, the last one where John didn't always get his voice double tracked. And his voice doesn't sound the same after that. And it's, I miss that. I like that clarity of just his voice and so without double tracking, just hearing that. I'd love to hear more songs like that. But
I'd be interested to know your thoughts on this. And I can't remember, I either heard it or read it, but someone recently said that in 100 years' time, the Beatles will be little more than an historical curio. What would you say from the data that you've got? Is there any suggestion of that might happen?
So here we are, and it's 2022, and we're talking about the Beatles. We could probably carry on talking about the Beatles for the whole day. And my kids are listening to the Beatles and growing up with them. And weirdly, probably, you know, will either be streaming it or, you know, or listening to it on vinyl. You know, the kids now, they, you know, my kids certainly will listen to more stuff on vinyl than they would ever listen to, like, CDs or, you know, those other formats that we thought were so important at the time. And I feel like if you look at the data, there's no sign this is diminishing. And it's not, it's more of a constant. And one of the interesting things about search data is you see constant interest. So for instance, like the top thing we search for every day is the weather, right? That's the number one thing people search for. Makes sense. You know, first thing, what's the weather today? And so you can really tell how big things are when they approach that. But also you see it as a constant. It's kind of pretty much constant, like with occasional spikes. Like now there'll be a spike because it's so hot. And you see the Beatles, it's like this constant interest with these spikes. It never really diminishes, never really goes off. And, you know, I can't, I mean, you know, I love the Jam. I can't see people, and then people do search the Jam, but it's not the same levels, you know. And maybe they won't, maybe that'll be a curio in a few years' time. But I just think that from the data now, Google search data has been around since 2004, so all the data we have shows the interest is only growing and constant. It's not diminishing. Now, this is only a few decades, maybe 100 years. Will it be the same? I don't know. I'm not... Who knows? Who knows where we'll be then? But honestly, none of those trends point that way at all. It's more that it's becoming like almost part of our common sense of who we are, our knowledge of who we are through data.
Simon Rogers, please come back on in 100 years' time. Let's do this again.
I promise I'll be there.
Simon, thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. Hey!